So we'll move on to our next case, Carroll v. Dougherty. Mr. Woodworth.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Charles Woodworth on behalf of Petitioner Charles Carroll. The constitutional principle at issue in today's habeas appeal is straightforward. Since the Supreme Court's decision in Hill v. Wampler, it has been clearly established that, quote, the only sentence known to the law is the sentence or judgment entered upon the records of the court. Here, Mr. Carroll received...
I thought it was the judge's oral sentence that took precedence.
I believe that that is correct, but in this case it doesn't matter. The term of supervised release was not in the oral sentence or in the written judgment.
Well, what difference would it have made if... suppose the judge had forgotten about supervised release. So, what difference would it have made if he'd remembered?
What difference would it have made if the judge had remembered
to the sentence?
Remembered to include it in the oral sentence.
Suppose he just wasn't thinking about it. He'd forgotten about supervised release. That's one possibility. So, or that might be this case. So suppose he had thought about it. He had realized it was mandatory release. Wouldn't the sentence have been the same?
No. If it wasn't part of the sentence, if the term of supervised release wasn't included, then it wouldn't be part of the sentence. And I think...
Missing my point. What difference does it make whether he realized that the supervised release is mandatory or didn't realize? How would it affect his sentence?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't
what
think I'm...
What difference does any of this make? If it's required, what difference does it make whether he mentions it or not?
Well, I think the easiest way to show what difference it makes is consider something like mandatory minimums. In a mandatory minimum, the judge, if in this case Carroll was required to serve a term of 29 years in prison, but the judgment of the court only provided for a term of 26 years, I believe that that would violate Wampler, and I doubt that respondent would try to keep Carroll in prison for those additional 3 years without petitioning the state court to correct amend.
I don't understand you. Oh, are you saying that there's a mandatory minimum of 29 years and the judge gave him a 26-year sentence? Is that what you're saying?
By way of analogy, right? I believe...
Right. So in that case, you'd say what? What would be the proper remedy?
Well, in that situation, the proper remedy would be for this court to direct the district, to reverse the district court and direct it to issue a writ of habeas corpus, and then allow the state, to the extent that it's
What's
able to...
What's the point of all this? If you know what the end point is, why do you have to go through all these somersaults to get there?
Because the end point isn't necessarily certain. Illinois courts have shown in the past, in, for example, Whitfield, which is the court that Illinois Supreme Court opinion that the Illinois appellate court in this case mistakenly thought Mr. Carroll was raising his claim under. In Whitfield, the remedy provided for by Illinois courts was to reduce the term of imprisonment in order for the total to match the original term of imprisonment once the parole term is
updated. Wait, I didn't understand. If the law requires a 29-year sentence and the judge accidentally or mistakenly, stupidly, who cares why, gives him a 26-year sentence, then there is a procedure, isn't there, for raising it to 29 years?
That is my understanding. Certainly, respondent contends that there is, but because there is...
So what would be the point? I don't understand. If it's mandatory, then you know exactly what the outcome of the procedure is going to be and why, therefore, have the procedure.
Well, I believe, though, that the outcome of the procedure isn't certain because of past cases.
But it's mandatory. The supervised release term is mandatory by statute as though written into the judgment, right?
Correct.
So if we vacate this sentence, it goes back and he gets the same time in prison plus the explicitly the mandatory 3-year supervised release. There's no way around the mandatory part of this. It's in the statute.
I understand that, Your Honor. The point I'm trying to make is that in the past there have been Illinois cases addressing situations in which the term of supervised release was implicated in other ways, where upon resentencing, instead of the term of supervised release being added on. So, for example, in this case, instead of Mr. Carroll receiving 26 years plus 3 years of parole, he would receive 23 years plus 3 years of parole, so that the final endpoint is the same.
But for habeas, federal habeas relief,
right,
it has to be an unreasonable application of federal law, right?
Correct.
I just don't see how you get where you want to go.
Well,
how can he benefit from this appeal?
The immediate benefit is the 3-year parole term will be removed. What happens after the fact?
Will be removed? I don't understand you. It's mandatory.
But it wasn't included.
But how can he benefit? It's going to be reinstated. You acknowledge that. It's mandatory, so there's got to be some more sentencing stuff, but it ends up in the same place.
But there isn't a guarantee that he will receive 26 years plus the 3-year mandatory.
Why not? What would change? I thought you would argue, but you don't argue, that a judge might say, well, I gave him... whatever. What was it? 26 years.
26 years.
I gave him 26 years. I'd forgotten about supervised release. But now that I learn I have to add supervised release, well, supervised release is a kind of quasi-imprisonment, and restrictions and so on. So if I'm going to give him... if I have to give him the 3 years of mandatory release, I'll cut a year off his prison sentence. Could the judge do that?
That's exactly what.
But you don't argue that. You do not argue that. You do not seem to care whether there is any way in which your client can actually benefit from correcting the sentence. That's what I find troublesome.
Well,
you seem to think it's totally irrelevant if the law absolutely requires the same sentence. Still, you think there has to be some additional procedure to get where we know we're going. And we're there already. I don't get that.
I believe that just because there is a procedure for correcting the sentence or amending it or altering it to include that term.
Wampler was a case, wasn't it, where the judge did have discretion. He could have given a different sentence if he knew what he was doing. That's I understand that. I even, as I said, gave you an example where this can conceivably operate in this case. But you seem to pitch your whole argument on the proposition that if there's an error in the sentencing form, it has to be corrected by a new proceeding of some sort, even if we are certain that there could be no difference in the result. That's what I don't get. It seems so impractical. The courts have nothing better to do than make changes that have no effect on anybody? What's that about?
That was not the impression I meant to give with the argument presented in
but
the
briefs. But you kept saying that it has to be reversed even if there's no possible way in which the sentence could be changed.
Well, I believe that once the writ is if the writ is granted, then there is a time when there is a benefit, and whatever happens after that is uncertain.
What's the benefit?
Since
mandatory release doesn't go to effect till you're released from prison, suppose it took 6 months to get this sentence corrected. There's no benefit to him from not being subject to mandatory release for 6 months when it doesn't go into effect for 26 years.
Well, the benefit is because what happens when that term of supervised release is added is uncertain.
We know what's going to happen. And
may I finish it?
Sure.
We know what's going to happen in terms of adding the supervised release term onto the sentence, but we don't know how that will affect the overall sentence.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Woodward. Mr. Levin?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Eric Levin on behalf of the respondent. This case really does make no difference, Your Honor. As the court,
but it could, couldn't it? Couldn't the judge think, well, if there's mandatory release, I don't have to give him such a long sentence?
I don't think we can say that's even a possibility here. There's no reason to think that the judge didn't know that MSR, mandatory supervised release, was part of this sentence automatically. That's a well-recognized part of Illinois law.
Oh, I see. So you don't. You think he or a clerk or someone just forgot to write it in?
I wouldn't even go that far and say they forgot to write it in. The Illinois Supreme Court's been clear that it doesn't need to be written in, that it's part of the sentence as though written therein. And judges for decades now have been...
He doesn't have... But, of course, it's very odd. Would you say that... could a judge in Illinois at sentencing just say to the defendant, I sentence you as required by Illinois law?
If Illinois law
say anything?
If Illinois law made every single part, every single component of the sentence mandatory and self-executing, so that there was no
right.
discretion whatsoever, then absolutely the judge could do that. If Illinois law created sort of a chart that said crime X gets a sentence
seems
of
seems odd to have sentencing without an actual sentence.
Well, I mean, certainly that wouldn't be the best practice.
But sentence you.
It certainly wouldn't be the best practice, but there would be really no constitutional concerns with that. The concerns in Wampler had to do with due process and notice and separation of powers, who's really imposing this. Those just aren't at issue here, where you have a mandatory self-executing term of the sentence that the legislature has said the district court has absolutely no discretion not to impose. And more than that, has said this is part of the sentence as though written therein. You don't have to say it. It's just there.
So this is a judgment form, correct? Is it a state-authorized form?
I don't know I don't know who's created the form.
But it is a form in popular use in
yes.
Illinois courts.
Yes.
And it makes no mention at all of the mandatory supervised release provisions for ex-felons.
The judgment form?
Right.
I think it actually has a space where the court can write in the term, but it's really unnecessary to do so in light of the Illinois Supreme Court just recently in McChriston definitively interpreted the mandatory supervised release statute that was in effect at the time as not requiring the court to write it in. It said the plain language of that statute, the as though written therein language, means that this term becomes a part of the sentence by operation of law as soon as the defendant is sentenced for a Class X felony or a Class
Are there other effects of a felony conviction that take operate as a matter of law, like loss of civil rights?
Yes, I believe there are collateral consequences of convictions like that that don't have to be written in. They're just automatic. I don't know of any off
They're
the top
of my head.
They're
imposed by statute.
Yeah, I would assume there could also be, you know, federal immigration consequences. Certainly, probably disenfranchisement consequences, and those don't have to be laid out. If they're automatic, if there's just no discretion involved, obviously, if you have a term that's discretionary and the judge doesn't impose it, there the presumption is it hasn't been imposed. You have precisely the opposite presumption here. If the judge says nothing about this term that's just automatic, the presumption isn't that he forgot about it or didn't realize it. It's that he knew this was an automatic term and just knew he didn't have to say anything about it. And so that's why Whitfield, the Illinois Supreme Court case, is totally distinguishable. That had to do with guilty pleas. And the issue there is not whether the trial court knew about the term, but whether the defendant, in pleading guilty, knew that he was going to be subject to that term. And so there's no reason to think that the Whitfield remedy, the striking of 3 years of the sentence to make up for the fact that the MSR term wasn't told to the defendant, there's no reason to think that remedy would apply here. And in fact, the Illinois Supreme Court has told us in McChriston that it wouldn't, that this is not a Whitfield type of case. And just to briefly touch on the possible remedy, Illinois law is clear that illegal sentences, which if this court were to say that the MSR term here was void, this would then be an illegal sentence, they can be corrected at any time. In New York, after Early, the legislature allowed for that procedure to happen, and the Second Circuit said that it was fine. There was no federal or state problems with that. So at the most that the petitioner could hope for here would be to get the term stricken temporarily until the state's attorney's office went back into the trial court and had the sentence fixed. If there are no further questions, Connors, we would ask the court to affirm.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wadley. So, Mr. Woodworth, your time expired, but if you have anything further, you can have a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, I would like to reiterate that it's important for the sentence of the court to include the complete custodial term for reasons of notice, not only to the defendant, but to
Doesn't parties. That statute provide notice? As though written, it says as though written into the judgment.
But the statute was subsequently amended, presumably because the legislature recognized the problem by stating that the courts had to write it in. So I believe that that would be a recognition that it is an issue of notice and of fairness and certainty regarding the custodial term. And we respectfully ask that the judgment of the district court be reversed.
Okay, thank you. And you were appointed?
I was.
Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.
Thank Mr. Levin as well.